Okay, so hey everyone, and welcome back to another episode of DeFault Global. This is where we connect with global first entrepreneurs and remote work experts from all around the world to share their experiences. Our guest today is Alison Easterway, a founder at Recognized. Alison, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
Sure. Alison, it is a pleasure to have you on the show. You have had this diverse career from HR roles to founding Recognized, and even I know that you're owning a wine store, right, in Paris. So can you give us in our audience a briefer review of your journey and how it led you to where you are today?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you can't pick the accent, I'm originally from Sydney, Australia, but this is coming to you from Paris, France, where I've been based for the last 12 years. I started working when I was 14 years old. I worked in a bakery as a sales assistant. I'm 34 today. So I have 20 years career experience, which is unusual, at least in France, where most people do basically a 5-year master's degree and then begin working. So already from the get-go for France, I have a bit of an unusual profile. I've done a lot of different careers. I worked in hospitality, I worked in retail, I worked in tourism. I taught English when I first moved to France. I worked in human resources in oil and gas. And then I moved back into human resources over here in France through the startup industry and worked for 3 early stage startups before basically building my own company, my first company, which was the wine store, as you mentioned, brick and mortar retail business in Paris. And then about 4 months ago, launched my tech company, Recognized, which I'm building today.
And before we dive into Recognized, I would like to ask about your wine store. So it's called Cave Woman, right? Cave Woman Wines, something like that. So what have you learned from the wine business that maybe that can be applied to HR, to your HR business?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd say it's probably the other way around. So I'd been a VP of people, a HR director for a number of years when I launched the wine store. And what I like to tell people is that I didn't need to learn any new skills to open a wine store. The skills of starting up a business in a particularly administrative heavy country like France is very much the HR skill set, which is, you know, figuring out complexity, making sure you've got legal things covered, making sure you've got all your admin bases covered. And then essentially the day-to-day job of running a wine store is an advice business, which is what human resources is. Basically, people come to you with problems and you have to solve them, except in the wine industry, it's a lot easier and nicer because they come in and their problem is, listen, I'm having some friends over tonight and I'm cooking this dish. What wine goes with that? And for me, you know, I said I'd always been an enthusiastic drinker of wine. It was a fairly logical next step for me to go from being a HR director in a tech company to a wine store owner, even if on paper those two things look like they have nothing in common.
Okay, sounds good. I have to say, I love those problems, you know, kind of that. So Recognized aims to help individuals navigate their career by breaking down, as far as understood, work and life experience into sort of transferable skill bricks, right? Could you tell us more about how Recognized achieve this and its mission? Can you tell more about its mission, the world of, you know, career development?
Yeah, absolutely. In one way, what we're trying to do is productize something that a lot of individuals have been living already in their career, including myself. Every single job I've had, it's because I've convinced somebody that the job I just finished was similar enough that they probably weren't wasting their time by giving me a shot. But that requires sort of somebody who's fairly self-confident and who's able to do the convincing, what we often refer to as personal brands. Secondly, it requires that the person making the decision is empathetic and also has a little bit more time and can see it. And then it also requires basically an environment where if things don't work out, you can stop working together after a couple of weeks. That's kind of a perfect storm that's required for people to career change or shift jobs or shift industries. And for me, it's really the exception to the rule. And yet, when you look on the decision maker side, every small business owner, every CEO, every founder, every manager has an example of some time in their past where they took a chance on someone who wasn't perfect on paper and it worked out extremely well. And so basically what we're trying to do with Recognized is say individuals already are navigating their own careers and lives like this. They're saying, hey, here's this thing I've done. Now I want to parlay that into doing something new. And on the other side, we have all these examples of where it's worked out. It's just what we don't have is a really good system of repeatability for making it obvious for decision makers that this person, whilst they might not have held that exact job title before, is actually fully qualified to do the job at hand. And so basically what we're trying to do with Recognize is just make it a no-brainer to match those two different pieces that are already existing out here. We're not so much trying to do a paradigm shift as we're trying to sort of have products in the recruiting space catch up to what the industry is already doing in an ad hoc way and basically supercharge it, which as far as I see it is technology's role.
So basically you're saying that your platform kind of bridges the gap between different career experiences and industries, right? So with that, maybe you can share some really interesting success stories or examples of how you help individuals, you know, to switch from one industry to another one, maybe from wine store to a tech business or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. What is really interesting is that when you start talking about a product like this, people immediately think that you're going to have people moving from one job to the next in order to access a higher salary. For example, that's a fairly common sort of conception. People say, okay, great, I use Recognize and then I get paid more. And that's great. If that's the situation, if that's why you're coming to us, we can help with that. But interestingly enough, the more interesting stories and anecdotes we have are actually about people sort of, you know, leaving extremely high-powered, high-paid careers and going into something quite different. You know, so for example, we have had on the platform a judge in one of the sort of more prestigious courts over here in France who moved into winemaking, natural winemaking. Obviously, that's a story that floated to the top given my own sort of path through there. We have sort of emergency room doctors who are incredibly qualified, have dealt with incredibly high pressure situations where we wouldn't normally have said, you know, a platform like Recognized is designed for people in the medical industry. We didn't go after them. We didn't target them in any sense. We said, look, that's a very different playing field. And they sort of flocked to us and said, well, listen, you know, we're looking actually to do something else, but we only know medicine. We have no network outside. The way you get jobs within the medical industry is extremely different to how the rest of the world works, and sort of helping them transition into things like operations manager jobs or managing huge warehouses for Amazon and things like that, where as soon as I say that, you go, oh, well, that makes sense. Managing a busy emergency room, that makes sense. You could manage a warehouse for Amazon, but on paper, that is not an obvious fit. And that's not something that potentially that ER doctor would have thought about until they came across to Recognize. So we do a few things, but the number one piece that we do at Recognize is actually help individuals see clearly what else they're already capable of. And that's a piece that's genuinely missing in the market today, which is there is no product out there that in 5 minutes or less can basically tell you what other jobs you're already qualified for, at least not that I've come across.
And who's your target audience? I mean, those guys who would like to change the industry, who would like to change their job because they're tired from doing this thing and they simply don't know what else they can do, or what is your target profile, you know, ideal client profile?
Yeah, for us, basically Recognizes for anyone for who their CV doesn't tell the whole story. So we're basically focused on anyone who sort of doesn't have that linear one industry, one career path that they've been building on and on. We're probably not the best position to help those people. That's great. They don't necessarily need our help. But interestingly, when you then dive deeper into that, you start to see these pockets of different populations. So you absolutely have the sort of relatively generic, we can all relate to the idea of sitting on the sofa on a Sunday night saying, hey, I'm not that excited to go to work tomorrow. That describes most of us, particularly in a sort of post-pandemic world. But there are really specific groups that we focus on helping. So right now, in just a few days, we're launching a really sort of specialized product for one of our populations, which is mums returning to the workforce after significant career breaks. So we're basically looking at people who are re-entering the workforce after potentially 10, 15 years out of it. Today, that's a population that's incredibly unserved and underserved by the existing recruiting industry, where the best case scenario is that somebody won't penalize you for taking this break. That's not really good enough. We know that, you know, 43% of the women who leave the workforce are actually highly skilled. But secondly, those 10, 15 years spent in home duties or childcare actually build their skills and build a very specific skill set that's incredibly marketable and incredibly transferable to the actual gaps and demands in today's workforce. So basically what we aim to do is to say you should get credit for those 15 years and those skills that you've developed that you potentially went into parenthood without. And at the end of it, you're coming out with them and they can be directly monetized essentially in the workforce. And nobody today is really built anything to make that really obvious. So that's one population we're working with. Another population that we're currently exploring and looking to help is US veterans looking to reintegrate civilian jobs, basically. So essentially any population where there is a huge skill set, it's just a little bit harder to parse when you're looking at a linear-based CV.
Okay, got it. And also I know that you have experience working in global first organizations, right? So, and I would like to talk more about that, about global hiring, about remote work. So in the current global business landscape, remote work has become a trend. So how do you, from your point of view, how do you think remote work and putting together like a teams from all over the world is shaping up the tech scene, the tech industry currently? Is it still maybe a trend, or from your point of view, you see this kind of the companies are trying to switch back, you know, to this old style of work? What is going on from your point of view?
Yeah, I think unfortunately this sort of overcorrection was predictable. Like we could have and should have seen this coming, I think, and some of us who've been, I guess, in the industry for a little while longer and who have seen things sort of come and go. For me, the future of work was always going to be hybrid. And the word I've always used is distributed rather than remote. And that's basically what we practice. I worked at a company called Screen, which was a YC and Greylock-backed cybersecurity company prior to opening the wine store and prior to founding Recognize. And we were founded in France. I was employee number 13. I think the week after I joined, we were opening our San Francisco office and the CEO and half the team were moving there. And then we did local hiring. And then sort of fast forward 2.5 years when we were acquired by Datadog, I think we had 90 employees in 16 different locations. So we were sort of doing fully distributed from not exactly day one, but not far from day one. We were doing West Coast US to Europe, which is brutal as far as time zones go. And US culture to French culture to, we had a ton of different cultural backgrounds in the team. That we sort of had all of that before our Series B. So there was a lot going on early. I think for us, we were always very clear that we were a distributed team, not a remote team. We made our offices places where people wanted to be, and I know people say that really lightly, but we sort of tried to really understand our team in both locations and have kind of this fear of missing out if you weren't heading into the offices. And I think that's doable in one way. So we definitely were office centric. We had people traveling often. We sent people from France to the US and vice versa. And we flew everybody who didn't have an office base into the home base every quarter.
And speaking about culture, I guess it was in one of your previous podcasts, you have noted that culture bias can influence management styles, especially in France. So how do you navigate cultural differences when it comes to HR and kind of communication within a global team or organization?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the easiest answers to that, so even currently with Recognize, my co-founder is French. I'm not. I've lived in France for 12 years. I speak fluent French. We've been friends for a long time before we built a business together. We still have misunderstandings that I would mostly put down to cultural differences. And the number one sort of quick fix solution to that is see each other in person. If we can't see each other in person, get on a video call. If we can't get on a video call, get on a voice call. If we can't get on a voice call, WhatsApp rather than Slack, because Slack is, in my opinion, the number one place where misunderstandings occur. And notably, because the actual medium leads us to be a lot more sort of transactional, because of the way, you know, we use productivity tools, we sort of optimize for ourselves and not for the receiver on those messages. And so I think there's a lot kind of at play around tooling and how you use things. So I think there's that. I think there's also investing heavily, and this is what I've always said about culture in general, not just cross-cultural, investing heavily in the good times so that you have a ton of goodwill. So that the day where there's a misunderstanding or the day where you do have bad news, the default on the team is to say, hey, every other time that Allison's written to me late at night to say, hey, we need to talk, it's not been a bad thing. So I don't know why this time around I would panic that she sent me that. So it's this idea of sort of, put goodwill away for a rainy day. And I think that goes a very long way, investing in, celebrate the small cultural differences. At Screen, we made a huge deal out of sort of celebrating food that was typical to France in the US office and making sure we had, there's this biscuit called Petit Écolier, which we made all of our Californian team basically addicted to. And so we invested in those small things. We did a huge Thanksgiving, in the French office as well, even though that's not really something that's celebrated in France. So you invest in those sort of low-hanging fruit where it creates this feeling of goodwill. So then when you're getting stuck in the intricacies of things that aren't fun in France or the US, you've got a bit of that to kind of buffer it.
Okay, let's talk about talent acquisition. You have a lot of experience with that as well, and I guess it was somewhere in your article or in some of your posts or maybe in your one of your interviews you mentioned having a relational approach to talent acquisition is very important. Could you provide some insights into how you nurture your talent pool over the long term, right? Especially in scenarios where you hire candidates years after the initial contact. That's one thing. And second thing, how can you keep this relationship with candidates who are just miles away from you, right? So for example, you're based in France and you have candidates in the US. How can you do that?
This is, in my opinion, the absolute sort of like superpower to any HR or a talent organization or even company, having goodwill, which is if you act as if every single person you encounter might in 6 or 10 or 15 years' time be somebody who works for you or who you work for, or who you need something from or who needs something from you, chances are that you're going to end up having much better interactions and people remember that, right? Unfortunately, the state of hiring is pretty abysmal. You don't have to go far to find horror stories about job interviews or, interviewers ghosting and things like that. So it's not, A, it's not difficult to be decent at this because the bar is very low. But secondly, I don't actually think you need to treat people as a candidate pool. What's so interesting, the industry has not figured out how to handle this problem of passive candidates. And the reason, in my opinion, is because there is no such thing as a passive candidate pool. There are people living their lives and advancing their careers and making work and life decisions. They're not your passive candidates. They're not your applicant pool. That was a single moment in time. And I think the key to basically engaging with this community of talented individuals you might one day want to work with or for is in treating them like individuals. And it's what we're solving with Recognized, actually. We're not a talent marketplace. We're basically a B2C consumer app that engages with people long before they're actually looking for a job. And the key to that is to engage with people, not as candidates, but as people. And I think that's true for any company. I also am suspicious over whether any one company can actually do that job of nurturing a candidate pool, because I think the way it works is, and I literally ran into somebody in Paris 2 nights ago who I'd helped get a job 6 years ago. And he has routinely referred customers to the wine store, organized events, and all of that. And we've forgotten probably how we first met, which was probably at some data meetup in Paris 100 years ago. So it's that. Had we met that first night at that data meetup, had we met, he's now in DevRel, but had we met and I said, oh, I'm hiring for a data engineer, and he said, well, look, I'm not looking for a job. There's no way anything else would have gone on. Instead, I went to the data meetup. I was interested. I learned things about the topic that was at hand. I went out for pizza afterwards. I chatted about things like metal music and motorcycles that I happen to enjoy. And years later, there's all this good stuff that's flown from it. So I think if you hold too tightly to must control or must engage, must nurture this talent pool, you'll probably mess it up. I think if you're a good person and a little bit spontaneous in the, hey, I thought you might enjoy meeting this person, or I thought you might enjoy coming to this thing that's adjacent to your definition as a candidate or an employee, that goes very far, and people remember that.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. You should treat those guys as individuals, not like resources, right? So also you have expressed some unconventional, I guess, opinion about the agency recruiting model, right? Can you talk more about that, about this the tough spots you have seen with this way of, hiring, and what you think like recruiting should look like in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. And I've probably been too harsh in the past with regards to agency recruiting. I think very specifically in France, recruitment is not seen as an aspirational job. And it's not a job where people are making particularly large amounts of money. If you contrast that with sort of the US or the UK, where executive headhunters are some of the top earners in the country. So it's sort of seen as this like sort of prestigious job. It's not seen that way in France, and therefore kind of the candidates who it attracts, and then the people they're learning from. So there's a very France particular sort of notion to that, which is most times when people say, "Hey, we're hiring in France. Who's the best agency you worked with?" I refer them to someone in the UK, which is a pity. They're doing a better job in English in a market that they're not in. So I think France has a long way to come on that. I think a lot of Europe is unfortunately very attached to linear career paths, excessive amounts of degrees and certifications, in a way that the US, the UK, Australia are not. And I do think that can be to its detriment, particularly in the startup and tech industry. So it's starting to shift, but it's a slow shift for sure. I think the future of recruiting isn't so much about AI. In fact, I really don't think it's about AI at all. If I'm being frank, I think. And the reason I say that is because I think the historical inputs would lead us down a very dark path if we were to essentially make faster decisions based off fast information that's available. We would make very bad decisions about recruiting. So I'm very skeptical about anything that relies on sort of the way people have gotten jobs up till now. I do think what we need is a bit more human intelligence, which is to say, yes, somebody who washes dishes in a restaurant and somebody who does data entry for a bank. Those two jobs are actually very similar in that they share 4 out of 5 core skills. And that for me is the interesting future of recruitment. In any case, we'll be forced into it. The impact of AI on recruiting is that yes, there will be jobs that are replaced by AI. And I think what's interesting about that is actually the rethinking that will come into what actually is a skill, what are skilled jobs, and it isn't the things at the top of the sort of earning potential that we're talking about, right? The things that will remain are those sort of baseline skills. And I think we'll have a bit of a sort of shift in valuation on skill sets that I think traditionally have been seen as low skill, when in fact they're essential. It's the essential jobs through the pandemic. It's the essential jobs when AI is coming through everything. And so I think that'll be sort of the main focus, which is a rethinking over what actually is a job, what makes up a job, what makes someone good at it. And we're going to sort of shake off some of this unnecessary attachment to signaling and certification.
Yeah, and probably my last question to you. So 2023 has been a tough year for many guys, especially from the tech space, right? And those recent layoffs, and chances are that 2024 will be as tough as 2023. So with that, what guidance could you offer to tech professionals who are listening to us from outside of the US, outside of France, and who kind of aspire to join some cool companies that are based in Silicon Valley or in Paris? What key, three key, maybe three key piece of advice you can provide them?
Yeah. Whenever there's a recession, whenever there's a downturn, whenever there's layoffs, it is this sort of recentering on the essential that comes to the fore. I do think we're still extraordinarily lucky and sheltered in the tech industry by this, in that we've had it good for a very long time. It doesn't mean that at the individual level, a layoff is not devastating for individuals and families. It always is. And I don't take that lightly, but I think the realization that a lot of people are coming to for the first time in their careers is nobody else is going to have your back. So unfortunately, you do need to be the one in the driver's seat of your career. Because when things are good, that's fine. But when things are bad, it kind of is every person for themselves. And if you sort of don't know how to A, understand what you're great at, B, share that to somebody in a decision-making role, C, understand the reasons why you're hearing no's, also work on those things. You know, we came through, particularly on the engineering side, we've come through a pretty golden era where engineers were sort of given a hall pass on anything on the EQ side of things, right? And I do think that's a, you know, I think if you want to stand out from the crowd, particularly in the US, software engineers, every time I meet a, maybe not every time, often when I meet software engineers in the US, I could be forgiven for thinking they're salespeople in front of me, right? In terms of the way they present themselves and they talk about things. European engineers, obviously, that's not a default skill, selling yourself and presenting yourself, but that's who you're up against. So I'd say that's probably something to keep in mind, which is learn those other skills that we've sort of been able to get away with not being great at, like communication, like sort of personal branding and that piece. All of that stuff's relatively low-hanging fruit and it's in your control. So I'd say work on what you can control, because the industry, the trends, the economy, unfortunately, that's not something we can sort of individually impact.
That's true. Thank you. Thank you, Allison. It's been fantastic talking about your journey with Recognized and your wine store, right? How Recognized is changing the game for careers. Thank you a lot. Thanks for this great chat and wishing you a lot of success with all your projects.
Thanks so much for having me, Vince.